I'm Gab, he's Jules. Gray skies over West London, grayer still down the road in Stamford Bridge after Arsenal going there, taking all 3 points. Jules, this show, I'm going to try to talk really, really fast because there's so much going on. Obviously, the Grand Derby, the Rome Derby, Bayern, Liverpool and Spurs, Napoli and Atalanta. But like, let's just try to do the best we can. Let's try to get organized. I think we have to start with Arsenal and Chelsea.
Because
what's going on at Arsenal is pretty remarkable. They win again. They don't just, you know, the scoreline, you can say 1-0, weirdo goal. But if we actually look at the performance over the 90 minutes, there was just one team out there.
Yeah, it was so one-sided. I was very surprised. It's been a long time since you've seen one of those, you know, heavyweight Premier League clashes. So one-sided for the away team. The home team, you know, you can dominate at home, but the away side, for Arsenal to go to Chelsea, play the way they did, I think the XG is 2.25 or 2.2. They had chances, they could have scored three easily, but it's not even so much the chances that they created and the ones they missed and the one they score. It's just how dominant they were with the ball in defensive transition. Chelsea had nothing. I think they had one shot on target. Ramsdale hardly have a save to make, so I've rarely seen Chelsea struggling so much at home in recent season, really.
So the headline of this is now that, oh, look, they have more points at this stage than the Invincibles did, blah, blah, blah.
Which you hate.
I was really struck, and Arteta mentioned afterwards how mature they looked out there. I was really struck by the level Granit Xhaka is playing at. Partey, we knew that when he's fit, you know, he can be that player. And obviously Odegaard, who's come on leaps and bounds. I thought this game was won in midfield.
Mm-hmm.
I know the flash is Saka and people, Gabriel Jesus runs around Saliba, so much, whatever.
Yeah, it's fine.
No, they're good and the defenders are good. Mm. But it was the middle of the park which set the tone, you know?
Yeah, I think the counter-pressing especially, like Chelsea could not do three passes together. Every time they had the ball or they got the ball or they started a move, they just could not go through that midfield. And that's why I thought at some point Graham Potter could say, okay, listen, let's try something else. And let play over that midfield and put them at least on the pressure in their own half. Instead, they kept trying to play, and in midfield, Xhaka, Odegaard, and Partey was just, again, so dominant. But I don't understand why you don't try something else when what you are doing is not working.
So I knew when I laid this out, I said, okay, we have to be nice to Arsenal, and then we put the boot into Chelsea for that wretched performance. I was going to do it in a few seconds, jump the gun there. That's fine.
I just don't get it.
No, let's go with this, okay? Because I appreciate there are injuries and whatever else, right? You decide to go with the back four. You decide to go with the box. Again, you keep changing the personnel in the box, so how these people are going to work together. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, how you would to me, I don't know if it was his mindset. I don't know if he's just not good anymore. I'm leaning towards the second one. How demented this signing was. Oh, Tuchel knows him. And like, he doesn't need to play in this game. He does not need to play in this game because Armando Broya is a better option. Or Havertz with another guy who can actually pass the ball in the middle of the park. You mentioned the passing, right? So we know Jorginho can pass on a good day. We know Thiago Silva can pass. And we know Mason Mount can pass. You're trying to pass through the press when you've got three players who can pass. The other people are people who just run with the ball, people who do nothing with the ball, people who just boot the ball like and miss hit everything like Kukurea, people who stand around and get eight touches on the pitch like Aubameyang. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Yeah,
How does that happen?
Yeah, I thought team selection was poor from Potter. I think the tactics, the game plan. The most infuriating for me is no changes in anything.
I knew this was coming, yeah.
But it's true. I mean, there's a point where after 15 minutes, we could all watch the game and say, okay, this is going to be a long afternoon for Chelsea unless they try something else here because they're so much worse than what Arsenal are and what Arsenal are offering. And yet, there's just nothing. He stands there on the touchline, not doing anything. There's his assistant, like the short one, who's talking to him, and he's just like, and it looks like they're just going through the motion, not doing anything.
I don't understand this. Now, I know at Brighton, they were such a perfectly oiled machine that he would obviously often change personnel and make tweaks and stuff, and it would work. And that's what he talks about when he talks about the concepts. And maybe it is a really, really long process to instill those. And as I've said, I think Graham Potter is brilliant. He showed it. But my concern is you don't have time to work on the training pitch with these people. So when you put them out there, Aubameyang is going to play differently than Havertz. And so inevitably, things are going to be different out there. And for me, that's what's so frustrating in this context. Azpilicueta at right back means that you're not going to get anything. He wasn't bad, but obviously he's not Reece James. Right? So everything changes, right? Cucurella, I don't need to see again, frankly. A word on the goal, because this was a bizarro goal. And you can go back, and if you're one of those people who says, well, we were still, you know, many people in my country used to think like this. Oh, look, you know, but they're still in the game. You know, you asked, why doesn't Potter make substitutions? Well, the goal came in the 18th minute of the second half.
Yeah.
Maybe he's looking at the game and be like, oh, look, we're in this game. It's nil-nil. Maybe we can nick a goal or a set piece and stuff like that, right? And then they go a goal down. And then he makes the substitution, like, 7 minutes later. This goal, there's a corner kick taken by
Saka.
Bukayo Saka.
So now, an in-swinger.
It's an in-swinger, which for those who don't know the lingo, means that the ball curves out and comes back in towards the goal.
So it can go directly into the goal.
Yeah, it doesn't normally. You don't expect it to go directly into the goal when you hit it, like, you know, a foot off the ground, which is how he hit it. I don't even know if he mishit it or he meant to do that. Anyway, you've got, you have three, basically there's three Chelsea defenders who are between, the ball literally goes right by them. I think one is Thiago Silva.
Yeah, Thiago Silva.
And there's somebody before him on the near post.
Yeah, and then Cucurella.
And then Cucurella, again, I don't know where to begin. Seriously, watch this again. He is so preoccupied. I don't know.
But the difficulty is that you have to look at the ball as much as you're...
he's not looking at a defender.
The player that you are marking.
He is embracing a defender. He looks like an offensive lineman who is in football, who is locked up with somebody, right? He literally, he's standing still and he has both arms. It's like he and the defender are pushing against each other. Whoever he's marking.
Yeah, I can't remember, maybe.
It might have been Thomas Partey. He looked like a big guy. Maybe it was Saliba.
No, Saliba was at the near post.
The ball goes right by him. Now, surely, especially when you have contact with somebody, part of the reason that you have contact with somebody when you're defending a set piece, I don't think I'm revealing some great secret, is that the reason you keep contact is so that you can also keep an eye on where the ball is. Because
that's the difficulty.
If your player moves, then all of a sudden you won't feel the contact and you say, oh, I need to react to that. Right?
So usually you put an arm on who you mark and then you keep an eye on the ball and then you know the movement.
I don't know what the heck this guy is doing.
But he's not really a defender. He started as a winger. No, but now
he's standing in front of the goal.
Yeah.
Right in the middle. So obviously the ball actually goes, I think, behind him. And then Gabriel Jesus. Sorry, it wasn't Gabriel Jesus. Gabriel Magalhães. Let's just call him Gabriel. Pokes it in.
Yeah.
I don't. And you could also, I think, ask questions of Mendy there too.
But I think you expect someone to clear it. Like, I don't think
which is reasonable.
Which is reasonable. Yeah,
that is such terrible defending, and I don't understand how does this happen.
I don't know. Arsenal work a lot on set pieces with the French set piece.
Yeah, but this isn't. Yeah, sorry, you can't tell this is French set piece coach.
No, I'm saying. Big up to Nicolas Jovin, though.
You're no Gianni Vio. Maybe one day you will be.
This is, I think, their seventh goal on set piece. However, I'm not sure this is how they worked it.
No. And you agree he mishit the corner?
Well, I would think that, you know, if you said to Bukayo Saka, I want the ball there, he can put it exactly there where you want at that level.
But it's like you want to hit the ball straight at the Chelsea defender on the near post. No.
No, but maybe the idea was like, they're not very good on defensive set pieces and corners, so put it as hard as you can, as close to the line as you can, instead of maybe a bit on the penalty spot, for example, on the edge of the box.
Like it doesn't matter.
Maybe that was the weakness of Chelsea.
That goal was a horror show.
Yeah. Overall, they were a horror show anyway.
But I just want to make this very clear. Arsenal did not win this game because it was a tight game and Chelsea made a defensive error. No, Arsenal won this game because they outplayed them in pretty much every area of the pitch.
Completely.
Aubameyang, I don't want to go back to this, but he must be in a situation now where, obviously, he goes to Barcelona. Well, he's at Arsenal. Nobody likes him at Arsenal. He goes to Barcelona.
Yeah.
He, you know, scores some goals, could have stuck around. Eventually, you know, asked to leave. Obviously, he had some issues off the pitch when his house was burgled and whatever. comes back to London. I don't think there was any great enthusiasm for Chelsea fans, but when he arrived...
But there was a recognition that he needed a number nine.
There was a recognition in Tuchel's mind and maybe...
Well, no, everybody... Well, you only had Broja left and I guess Kai Havertz after Lukaku left, so...
I got Broja, I got Kai Havertz, I got Raheem Sterling, I'm okay.
No,
I'm
all right. I was all in for a number nine. I'm okay. Not saying Aubameyang, but for a number nine
not this
to
guy.
Come in.
Not this guy. Not old, it was just, you know, not really a nine, guy who spent a lot of his career on the wing. I don't... Whatever. But now he's in a situation where he's managed to, I think, alienate a lot of Chelsea fans, while still not endearing himself to the Arsenal fans who didn't like him, especially Mikel Arteta, right?
Yeah.
You had an issue...
This was a big game for
him. With some of those promos that he cut before.
He did a promo where, you know, like, you see the player saying, come on, let's go, that kind of stuff, pretty much. And then they said to him, like, okay, one last one, say it's nothing personal. And you can see that he's a bit like, but he still says it. And now it still goes on air, it's broadcasted, it's everywhere, on social media, everybody picks it up, of course you do. And then what happens? You know that if you lose this game already, even without the nothing personal line, you're going to get destroyed. And now you say it's nothing personal, you have... one of the worst games you've probably ever had in your career against a team that you left in such a way not that long ago, and now he gets all that slack and everything, which he deserved, because he could have said, listen, I don't want to do that, this is not cool, but he still said it, and now that makes him look like
I'm kind of floored by this, because he's not a dumb guy. He's not an uneducated guy.
No.
He's made mistakes. Everybody's made mistakes. Coming from somebody else, you know, I could live with it. But this is such a massive miscalculation.
Completely.
You know?
I mean, you play Arsenal, you know everybody's going to talk about you and look at you. And then you go, before the game, do that. And then you have that kind of performance during the game. At the time, it looked like he was not even trying. You can miss chances, you can miss the touch, you can miss the pass. I'm all for that. But he was not even... When he came off... It looked like if he just arrived at the stadium.
Were you surprised that when he came off, Potter also took Kai Havertz off? Now, Havertz wasn't having a great game.
No, and
he changed it around. He put on Gallagher at that stage and Armando Broja, right? Now, obviously, Armando Broja means you've got your target man and you have Gallagher in there who's an extra passer who they need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand, though, taking off Havertz, because... he's still somebody who can create out of nothing. If you were to look at this Chelsea team and say, who is the most gifted player on the pitch, who can score an individual goal, it would probably be Havertz.
Yeah. It looked to me like if you keep Havertz on the pitch with Broja and with all your attacking options, then you can lose 3 or 4-0. And maybe he thought, you know what, we would be too exposed if I leave Havertz on the pitch with Broja. And let's say do a Kovacic for a Gallagher for Loftus-Cheek, for example, like a position for... I mean, I don't know. It looked to me that he never really wanted to come back into the game, even with Broja on. It looked like it was such a passive afternoon from Potter. I had no idea pre-match. And again, I said to you off air, I don't understand what the game plan was and how he thought he could hurt Arsenal, because there was just nothing that Chelsea did with the ball that indicated that. And then a 1-0 down, it looked even worse, because everything he did made no sense whatsoever. And there was no reaction.
I want to reiterate this going forward. I am a Potter believer. I think this is somebody...
I want him to do well, too.
I want him to do well. I believe he can do well.
Yeah, me too.
If he is afforded the necessary time doing what he has done, doing what made him great, which is not playing midweek football, which is you don't have that luxury at Chelsea. So that means you have to necessarily give him more time. And the other mitigating factor, like I've said before, is Chelsea had a horrendous... For all the money that... In relation to the money spent, they had an absolutely horrendous summer transfer campaign.
But what made that transfer campaign more horrendous is that you decided to start the season with Tuchel instead of sacking him. On day one, they knew. On day one, Todd Boehly knew he could not work with Thomas Tuchel. There's no, like, don't give me the, like, 100 days, like, kind of period to see where we are, and then we make a decision. From day one, they knew. So from day one, you sack him, you bring him Graham Potter, he has the preseason that he wants, he does the fitness work that he wants, he does the set-piece work that he wants, he signed the players that he wants, and you don't have now a manager who have half of a squad that he doesn't want, half of a squad that doesn't fit his philosophy. Clearly a fitness issue, I think, like every new manager who come in and say, like, well, they're not fit enough, they're not really,
they
I don't
all
want
say
the,
that. They all,
they
say,
all
that.
Say that. And you're not in this situation where you're thinking, like, but the timing of the Tuchel sacking was so bad that you could have, you handled, the whole handling of the situation was terrible from the beginning.
So this leads me to my next point, like, going forward, right? Because Chelsea spent an enormous amount of money over the last few years going back to Abramovich, and I want to be boring with financial fair play. They spent a ton again, obviously, this past summer. Mm-hmm. Financial fair play is effective this season. From next year, we're going to move to the new version of financial sustainability regulations. I think as smart as Bigdali and Boehly say they are and are generating revenue and blah, 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 this could hurt them. This could really hurt them unless they do what has enabled Chelsea to not fall foul of financial fair play all these years, which is selling very, very well, selling homegrown youngsters well. But I look at this now. You mentioned the center forward, right? Aubameyang is not Chelsea's long-term center forward, right? We all no. agree on that, right?
Yeah.
Kai Havertz may not be a center forward at all.
Yeah.
But they have money tied up in Kai Havertz. They have money tied up in Aubameyang. They have money tied up in Romelu Lukaku, who, you know, is going back. And they have Armando Broja. You know, the easiest way to resolve this is, oh, just sell Armando Broja for money, which is not what you want to do.
No.
Presumably, you want to find out if he can play. That's just one example. In midfield, in the middle of the park, right? Kovac's not getting younger. I don't know that we'll see N'Golo Kante again.
Well, he's out of contract.
He's out of contract anyway.
Jorginho the same.
Georgie's out of contract. Loftus-Cheek, I don't know. I mean, after,
I mean, come on. Let's be serious here.
Again, I think because you're big and you're technically proficient, which Loftus-Cheek is, there's probably a player in there, but I think he needs a lot of individualized care and whatever to make a contribute.
I think this level is too high for him. But I like him. So go down outside top six and have a really good career. It's okay. Not everybody can play for Chelsea Football Club. I mean, you know, at the top, at their best, and being consistently good. Not everybody is. This is one of the best clubs in the world. Go to, like, I don't know, an Everton or an Aston Villa and have fun and be good, and that's your level.
You could argue that defensively as well, despite signing all those center backs this summer, they're going to have an issue as well because Thiago Silva's not getting any younger, because Koulibaly's not getting any younger and doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, you still have a few good years with Koulibaly, and then you've got Fofana. And if you believe in Chalobah, you've got
if Fofana has ever fit again.
James, Chilwell?
Yeah, no, Reece James and Chilwell put out wide. I don't know how much he likes Chilwell because he seems to prefer Cucurella's hair, so I don't know.
But what do you do in January? Because all that is great. All that is great, and the army of scouts and sporting directors that they just brought on.
This is the key, right?
What do you do in January?
You brought in this enormous group of recruitment people and whatever. These guys are going to assess what Chelsea have. They're going to speak to Potter. It's a fine line, I think. It's a very fine line because at some point, these guys, what people don't understand is these recruitment people, if they're good, they're not just people who execute, right? They're people who have their own opinions and are going to be self-advocates and they're going to advocate for their opinions.
Yeah.
Potter may feel differently. I know obviously,
yeah, but
a couple of them are his own. You know, the guy Kyle and whatever. It's so, so tricky because if I'm, say, Vivelle, right, they can say, oh, look, I have a chance to sign this, I don't know, this right wing back who's worth 80 million and I can sign him for 15 million, but we need to sign him now.
Yeah.
And then you say, oh, but Reece James plays that position. He's like, oh, but he's an asset to the club. How is Boehly's mind going to think there, right?
Yeah.
So it's always a delicate balancing act. These guys have to make it work very, very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, what they do is finish top four. They can't compete for the title. They can't win the Champions League, I think. I mean,
That's a big ask. That is a big ask because you've got Spurs, you've got Newcastle, you've got Manchester United.
Come back. Yeah, Liverpool.
And Liverpool may come back too. Yeah.
So what do you do in January? Because I think this is the urgency is January. Do you sign one player? Do you go for a top player? Do you go for someone who maybe can just bring something a bit more positive in midfield or up front? I mean, I don't know.
Honestly, I'm going to give you the boring.
You keep them and you keep your money for the summer?
I'll give you the boring answer. Your focus in January is moving on those players who still have some value.
Yeah.
Move them out of the club. Because it doesn't help to have Hakim Ziyech take up their time.
20 minutes he played this season in the Premier League, I think. Come on.
And we know he's a talented player. And he could help 99% of clubs in Europe, right?
But why is he still doing in your club?
Because they don't know how to sell them. Because in the summer, they didn't have anybody
true.
To sell them.
That is not true.
No, it's as simple as that. They did some of these ham-fisted when they tried to sell
this
Ziyech,
is worse than
to stop
I thought.
Pulisic,
if that's the case, it's worse than I thought.
Who knows? Maybe they'll just offer $100 million for Rafael Leão and be gone. Now we promised this Arsenal fans. We've had so many nice things to say.
Do you believe
that they can win the title?
Yeah,
they can win the title. I'm still going like 95-5 or 80 or 90-10.
Yeah.
To City.
The maturity they showed on Sunday, it's compared tremendous. To, for example, that defeat at United, where they came back to 1-1. I mean, it's easier when you obviously open the scoring, but you see the progress they're making. But again, this was their strongest 11. Chelsea right. were nowhere near their strongest 11 with all the players missing that they have, which I think has to be also taken in consideration when we analyze the game.
Okay, so we've promised this to Arsenal fans, and this is part of my wider issue about how football's become so polarized and the big teams have so many resources that they can go and just crush all the smaller teams. People think it's normal that teams win the title with 100 points and whatever else. It's not normal. We have a serious problem. I've said this before.
Yeah.
So as evidence of this, we both remember the Arsenal Invincibles.
Yeah.
This team has more points than the Arsenal Invincibles.
One more, yeah. So right. Arsenal have never had 34 points at this stage of the season before. Ever.
Now, when we go through the teams, right, one by one, in terms of where they were at that time, not who's had the better career, right, but where they were at that time, that season, versus what they're producing now, right? I just wanted you to do the 1 to 11, Jules, and we'll see if we agree, right? Lehman or Ramsdale?
I pick Ramsdale.
I pick Ramsdale too because I'm not really a fan of Lehman. Okay. Loudon or Ben White?
I've been very impressed by Ben White at right
back. But I'm still picking Loudon. Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Sol Campbell of that time.
Yeah.
Against Saliba.
Saliba.
You're going to take him over Sol?
No.
I mean, okay,
but,
fine. No.
They're not the same age. No.
But we're that's what I'm saying is this was an Arsenal team in full maturity.
I mean, I pick Saliba ahead of Kolo Touré, for example. So I'll have a Sol Campbell.
You have to pick Gabriel against Kolo Touré, and then you pick Kolo Touré or Francois or whatever he goes by these days, right? Ashley Cole or Zinchenko, right?
Arteta write that today. Ashley Cole cannot do what Zinchenko is doing.
That's fine. But so, Zinchenko can't do what Ashley Cole is doing.
But yeah, but Ashley Cole worked at the time for Wenger. Zinchenko now, there was no way Arteta would pick Cole ahead of Zinchenko.
The reason I'm doing this is to underscore how young this team, how good they can be going forward.
Yeah. But you can't. The Invincible are the Invincible for a reason. But maybe that time they had 26 wins, 12 draws, as you reminded me before. But maybe the level of the Premier League then was better than it is now.
Do you really believe the level of the Premier League back then was better than it is now?
No, but in the sense that maybe the Everton side in that season was better than the current Everton
side. Yes, and that is my point. It was better because you didn't have this massive concentration of resources that we have now. That is partly my point. Because let's get going with the players, because I think this is relevant. Okay. Gilberto Silva, who won a World Cup against Granit Xhaka, who nearly got sent off. Yeah? That's Gilberto Silva every day of the week. Patrick Vieira up against Thomas Partey, with all the love for Partey. It's Patrick, right?
Yeah.
We'll compare Udegaard with Pires, yeah?
I mean,
it's close.
But I would never go against Robert Pires.
Okay. I think that one might be a toss-up. Ljungberg against Saka. We'll go Saka, Sorry, Freddie. And then Henry and Bergkamp against Martinelli and Gabriel Jesus. I'm not even going to entertain the possibility of a discussion.
But
to me, there are three takeaways here. One is the point I originally made, which is this weirdo imbalance. Two is the phenomenal job that Arteta is doing
incredible.
With this team. And three, the fact that this Arsenal team can get better. Because if we have this conversation in 3 years' time, most of these guys get better, they make one or two more signings, then maybe it's a different conversation.
Yeah, completely. This is what, let's say, 2 years in the process. I think from what Arsenal and Arteta are very good is what they've built so far in that space of time in terms of changing 80% of that squad from where Arteta arrived, the players that he didn't want, the players that didn't fit, the players that didn't want to be there, all gone. And in return, sign the players that would fit perfectly in what he wants to do, which I think a lot of clubs, including Chelsea and Potter, will have to take as an example and just follow. This is what Potter has to do now. Get rid of all the players in that squad that doesn't fit his philosophy, that he doesn't want there, and sign ones who will fit the philosophy. But we've said all along that Arteta was an elite coach. Even when they were a bit struggling, we said that he had the right ideas, the right attitude, the right message. You can make fun of some of the team talks and some of the drawings. Of course, I get it. He's got ideas, and the right. bond that he has with his players is something else.
Let me ask you something else. So we keep talking about signings, right? Arteta has a big voice in the signings, but he's not the guy doing the signings. There's a guy named
His talent ID is spot on, though.
Edu is the sporting director there, right?
Yeah,
this is the same Edu who, we like him as a person because he's a very nice guy, but we destroyed him not that long ago, or I did, for extending Aubameyang's contract, for bringing in David Luiz, for bringing in Willian. Again, I'm blanking on whether Arteta was there when Willian came in, right? But this is the same guy.
Yeah.
What's changed? Was it that Unai Emery wanted these players?
No, but I think...
Has Edu taken a step back vis-a-vis what the manager wants? Has Edu's vision of what's needed changed? What's different?
No, I think that when Arteta arrived, your context is different. Context evolves in where you are in a football club. So maybe Arteta arrives, you need a quick fix in certain position.
Right.
So you go for what's available, either on a free, you need some experience.
I will tell you right now.
No, but
That is a stupid way of thinking, and I'm glad he learned from his mistake.
Because
they were so far away from top four.
But
to think that
William
and David Luiz are going to take you into the top four, no, they should have started rebuilding then. And they did do some rebuilding then.
But it's not that easy, Gab. If you don't have money, you can only sign free agent. Good luck to find some free agent that will...
These are expensive free agents, though.
I know they are. But
you can spend that same money on kids. And again, to be fair to Arsenal, they did spend money on kids, right? William Saliba, who obviously arrived, had his issues, came back. He wasn't cheap. Was it like 30 million, 35 million, right?
Yeah.
That means I've identified him. I believe he's good.
No,
I'm going to stick with
sure.
him when he's not even... Was it Emery who left him out of the squad or whatever,
well,
right?
Yeah, Arteta then.
Or Arteta, you know.
Anyway, yeah.
That shows foresight. But I think to me the lesson here is you have to commit one way or another. And if you bring in Willian and Alba and so on, you're bringing in last pieces of the puzzle to get you over the top. You do that when you're close to top four, close to winning the title.
Yeah, maybe.
Arsenal
I think the most important
there.
Is the template. What you have to do, the direction that you take. At that time, Arteta was still thinking, still looking. He played with the back five. They won the FA Cup, okay, but it was the pandemic years. Now that they have the structure and the template, they're going to go forward that way and sign the players that just fit in, like a Zinchenko, like an Odegaard, even if they're maybe not the ones that people fancy the most.
All right, that's enough praise for Arsenal. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launcher online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Arsenal. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
More woe for Tottenham Hotspur, Jules. Liverpool win 2-1 at the Tottenham Stadium, and Antonio Conte's crew slip to fourth.
Yeah, I was there. It was, I have to say, an incredibly intense game. Not a great game. There were loads of mistakes, I thought. From both sides. But I think maybe because there was so much intensity that led to mistakes. I mean, when you have Perisic and Kane up front, even if Perisic had two really, well, the second one especially, chances. But Spurs, I think, turned up in the second half, which was really good to see. I don't know how they find, where they find that energy, but I have to say, and maybe it's a credit to
Conte shouting at them at halftime?
To Ventrone, yeah, maybe as well. And, you know, rest in peace, Ventrone. But it was incredible to see them that second half on the front foot, putting Liverpool under so much pressure. On another day, I think the draw is a fair result, more than a Liverpool win. But Liverpool in the first half were really good. Their game plan, going back to game plan, which that's what good managers do, to obviously insist on the Emerson, Royal and Dier sides with the diagonals toward Darwin Nunez was great, was spot on. Salah looks sharp. But then in midfield,
Dier's mistake.
They can't control. I mean, come on. Don't get me started.
Right.
One, I think he knows this is not the pass to do. Yeah, right? No. He's not under pressure.
Even if he hits the header perfectly, it's not.
But when he sees Salah in the corner of his eye, he says, oh, damn, this is not good. And then he panics and messes it up. That's how he messes it up. But like, I don't want to ever see Dier in that position again. If it's a back three, he has to play the sweeper role. He can't play anything else.
Should have been a penalty, Alexander Arnold.
If you give the one for Fulham from Cancelo, if you give the one on De Bruyne from Robinson, you have to give this one. It's the same contact. I don't care if it's a push in the back or you touch his toe. It's exactly the same contact.
I would tend to agree with that one. But I will say this. I think you wrap what happened, given the injuries and everything, you wrap what happened in the second half. And if you're Conte, you say, let's do
completely
this from the start.
And Kulusevski's return is a huge plus because he made such a big difference. It was first versus second in Serie A, Gab, this weekend. And Napoli gets another 3 points away to Atalanta.
This was a serious
it
trap
was
game.
Great.
It was a serious trap game because you knew Atalanta were going to go out of the gates a million miles an hour. And no game in midweek, whereas Napoli had to travel to Anfield, of course. They take the lead. Ademola Lookman, who's been phenomenal, by the way.
Osimhen giving the penalty.
But then Osimhen scoring.
What a difference.
Right? 1-1. No Kvaratskhelia, by the way.
Yeah.
And Elif Elmas then getting the winner. This is one of the secrets of this Napoli team, is when pieces are missing, the guys who come in and don't miss a beat. So massive, massive win for them. Barcelona beat Almeria 2-0, and Robert Lewandowski takes one of the worst penalties of his career. Joseph, this was very one-sided, and really never in doubt, right?
Yeah, never in doubt. Good goal by Ousmane Dembele, I like that. I mean, Almeria could have been a little bit of a tricky game, maybe, but not on Saturday, not for a special night, because it was obviously Gerard Piqué's, which is the next question, last game. And I think maybe for Lewandowski penalty, quickly, I think he wants Piqué to take it. He says it. Piqué said, no, you go ahead. Then maybe that messes up with Robert's mind because he's...
Oh, so then I'll take a stupid penalty. Yeah, okay,
oh, fine. And Gab, as I was mentioning, this was also the final game of Gerard Piqué's career. But I think we all know that he's not going away. Were you surprised at how it happened, though?
Yeah, and look, I don't want to be conspiracy theorist here, but I think, you know, Marca today reporting that he refused Barcelona's offer of a farewell press conference, even though it would have been the perfect timing for it. You know, you can do it during the break. Mm. It's not like you're taking attention away from others. His grandfather, whose grandfather, by the way, who's worked for Barcelona for many years, wonderful name, Amador Bernabeu. What's up with that? You know, he said he just grew sick of sitting on the bench and not contributing. And could he have realized this in the summer? Maybe there were also financial components. I want to focus on the fact that Gerard Piqué has just been an absolutely tremendous footballer. It's funny because I had dinner with him many, many years ago in Manchester when he was a teenager. He just arrived. He was a little bit overweight. Maybe liked to, you know, he liked to stay up late and everything.
Yeah.
It was a night when Giuseppe Rossi was also there, who I think was living with Gerard Piqué at the time. Like, you know, he kind of like bows out early at like 8 o'clock so he can get his beauty sleep. And Gerard had no such but he turned into, I think,
incredible.
One of the greatest
616
defenders.
616 games for Barcelona.
616 games, more than 40 goals, obviously a World Cup winner,
two won Euros.
Four Champions
League
titles,
three and one.
Won the Euros as well. And I think incredible. In some ways, I'm still so fascinated by his relationship with Sergio Ramos for Spain.
Yeah.
Such vicious rivals at club level, being able to broadly put it aside for their national team. I mean, they're not the only ones. Obviously, Barcelona, Real Madrid divide. He's just been tremendous. I'll tell you what, he will be back. He needs
he will
to
be
back
a president one day
at this club one day. Unai Emery gets off on the right foot as Aston Villa beat Manchester United 3-1. Jules, Erik ten Hag was especially annoyed after this one. But let me guess, you're going to suggest that he should be most annoyed with the guy who looks back at him when he looks in the mirror, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why he doesn't rotate more in Europe. But for me, they look tired. And I think when you look tired, when you're not really into the game because you've played so much, you play at Real Sociedad at San Sebastian on Thursday night, you get sloppy, terrible start, two goals down after, what, 10 minutes? Terrible start of the second half for similar reasons as well, because legs are heavy, you go again, it's difficult. They had chances during the game to come back. It was not all bad, but those terrible start of each half just cost you so badly. I just don't think you can keep playing pretty much the same team Thursday, Sunday in the first part of the season,
yeah,
like this.
I'm really surprised he's not rotating more. And then it's funny because we don't see Cristiano for a long time. Then we see, like, you know, him playing every minute games. Not the best game from him. He was clearly frustrated again. Lisandro Martinez, by the way, I know it's become, you know, everybody said, oh, look, he's too short. And now, like, oh, no, size doesn't matter. And now, again, like, maybe he's just not that good because...
No, he's good, but it's
not a good game.
Casemiro looked tired as well.
Garnacho, maybe...
I don't think he's ready yet to go like that in Premier League.
And we haven't mentioned Donny van de Beek. But
no, exactly. Well done to Unai Emery, though. You know, good little tactical tweak, although Gabby doesn't agree, but, you know, I want to see more.
It's a lot easier when you're 2-0 up after 15 minutes, okay?
Yeah. Weird game for Bayern Munich, Gab. They go 3-0 up away to Hertha Berlin and everything seems okay. And then it's 3-2 at halftime. Reason to be concerned, or do you think it just doesn't matter because they have Eric, Maxim, Choupo-Moting now, and all those Ronaldo, the Brazilian memes, like...
What is it, like 7 straight games he scored in?
He's in front.
No, I'm not super concerned because they're 3-0 up, they're cruising. Hertha's goals, one of them is a ridiculous worthy from Luka Bakio,
who seems
to always score against him. The other one was a very generous VAR-assisted penalty. And then in the second half... they conceded nothing.
Yeah.
Like nothing at all.
It's
almost like Hertha's like, oh, look, we got within one. Oh, we did our jobs, you know. So, I think they're fine. Paris Saint-Germain went away to Lorient 2-1. For those keeping score at home, it's 17 wins, 4 draws, and 0 defeats in all comps this season. No Messi, but when Neymar plays like that, you don't really need him, do you?
You always need Messi, of course, but Neymar with the goal and an assist, the goal gifted by the goalkeeper. By the way, the Lorient goalkeeper got injured too. Not the best of PSG's performances this season.
We've been saying that a lot recently.
Mentally, and for a lot of teams. But they got the job done. That's the most important. They're 5 points clear at the top. One more game to go. And then it's the break. So, but I wrote it for the website. I think this could be Neymar's best Neymar ever. Better than the Barcelona one. Better than the 14-15 season. Better than the Santos one. It just amazes me with the maturity as much as the talent has always been there.
Just in time for the World Cup.
Yeah. My boy Adrien Rabiot scores a worldie for Juventus and they beat Inter 2-0. Gab, is their life in Allegri yet?
So, all right, pros and cons.
Yeah.
I thought Inter dominated the first half. They had a lot of chances. Denzel Dumfries missing.
Come on. Barrera might have been offside, but still, he has to score.
Yeah, you still put it away, right? Yeah. What I like about Allegri, also because everybody's injured, is like, look, he actually started Miretti and he started Fagioli, who scored the goal that made it 2-0. And hey, maybe Nicky Beans, as we like to call Nicola Fagioli, will stick around in the starting line. And Miretti certainly should.
Yeah,
you know, obviously, he had Vlahovic, had a lot of guys out. They're up there. They're level on points with Roma. They can make a run at the top four, but there's still a lot of fragility there. And by the way, this VAR call, Danilo's disallowed goal, this is one for purists. He's being fouled, so it probably should have been a penalty, I thought. He manages to strike the ball towards the net. Inadvertently, it comes off his other finger and goes into the back of the net. It's a classic case. The rule, you cannot score.
Yeah.
You know, even involuntary, ball can't go in with your
hand. You know what I like, though? I like the fact that Kostic stayed up for the Inter corner, because in case, which I'm sure, Max, you'd plan it that way, in case the ball comes back, he's your quickest player on the pitch for the counter-attack, and then everybody follows, and that worked perfectly for the Rabiot goal.
Kostic, by the way, man of the match.
Yeah, he was great.
Jules, we knew the Union Berlin were going to hit a speed bump at some point, but I didn't expect them to fail so dramatically against our friend Xabi Alonso. 5 goals conceded in one half, in the second half? Well, what's up with that?
I mean, I just think that at halftime, it's just like, this is it, we can't run anymore. And if that team can't run anymore, because that's a lot of what they do, then I think they're in trouble and they struggle. And to concede the first one, the Andrich one, straight after the break, and then the two Jabby one back to back pretty much. After that, there's just no way back.
So curious to see if they get a reaction.
Yeah, I'm not sure it tells you a lot about Bayer though. I have to say, I think it's more Union who just could not go anymore. But let's see. A late Erling Haaland penalty sends Manchester City past Fulham 2-1 gap. City played over an hour with 10 men after the Cancelo red card. Is that a fair result, that win?
Yeah, I think it was a fair result. But the reason, so the Jock Cancelo red card, I thought was a correct decision. The reason it was a fair result, other than the fact that Erling Haaland had a nice goal disallowed for a very marginal offside.
But still offside.
But still offside, whatever. Mm-hmm. Is that Fulham, I don't understand. It's 1-1. You're playing more than an hour against 10 men. All they can manage, I think they managed 3 shots on goal, like 0.10, all of them long-range strikes.
Yeah.
You have an extra man. That means somebody is always open.
Always.
You know, instead, they just sit. And, like, this makes zero sense to me. I really like Marco Silva, but this was just such a bizarro approach and really sends a wrong message, I think. Real Madrid kick off in a few hours and can regain top spot. But in the meantime, Jules, they're sending a delegation to Brazil for Palmeiras wonder kid, Endrick.
Yeah, Endrick, very much on their radar. I don't think they're the only one. I think there's a lot of other clubs who are going to try, but maybe Real Madrid are just ahead of everybody else, and what a signing it would be.
The dad says nobody's favourite. He's just talking to everybody right now.
Yusufa Moukoko shines at Borussia Dortmund, beat Bochum 3-0. Gab is coming good, and he's still only 17, and his contract comes out soon.
That's right. So he turns 18 on November 20th. He made his debut one day after his 16th birthday 2 years ago.
He was allowed to start before.
No, last year he kind of went off the boil a little bit. I don't know why they didn't extend his contract before. His contract
is
2024, if I'm honest. June 2024. But obviously, you don't want him going into the last year of his contract next season. And he holds all the cards.
That The first goal.
Oh, yeah. Wow. By the way, the two goals.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so the first goal, he absolutely leathers it from outside the box. The second one, he chips the keeper. Phenomenal. If I'm Yusufa, by the way, if you're listening, look around. Learn from Erling Haaland.
Yeah.
Extend your contract, but say, I want a reasonable release clause in there.
Totally.
Otherwise, I'm just counting it down.
Yeah.
Sticking with Dortmund, Jules, Bochum captain Anthony... I don't even know if I should pronounce this French style or Spanish style.
Yeah, what is it? I think it's Lucila.
Lucila?
Yeah.
He got a knee on the head from his own physio. He was down on the pitch needing treatment. The physio ran on.
It's crazy.
Slipped, ended up whacking him in the head. You ever seen anything like it?
Never before. I have to say, this makes me laugh. We should not giggle at it because I think it must be painful.
Why are physios wearing sneakers on the pitch? Why aren't
they? So it's very, very interesting. We don't have much time, but some wear the whole suit. Some wear, in Italy, I've seen them wearing suit with studs. I'm like, come on.
You got to wear studs if you're on the pitch.
You don't have to
sometimes.
Simple as. I don't know.
Well, otherwise, injure your own player.
Yeah, they're still doctors. Come on. Roger Ibanez's mistake and a Felipe Anderson's goal give Lazio the win in the Rome derby. Gab, did Mauricio Sarri impersonate Jose Mourinho here?
Oh, I know what you're saying, right? The best part of this game was before kickoff with the two tifos and the choreography.
Yes.
They're simply nothing like the Rome derby in the Eternal City. You're saying they impersonated Mourinho because he took advantage of an opposing mistake and then spent the rest of the game.
Nothing else, pretty much.
Pretty much. I think once Pellegrini went out, it was really hard for Roma, Zaniolo and Abraham. Mourinho, limited options.
Yeah.
Did his best, but not to be. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. More derbies!
Yes.
Betis and Sevilla share the spoils in El Gran Derby. Jules, nobody got hit by a pole this time. This was an absolutely wild game.
It was
this
incredible.
Was entertainment.
Yeah.
I think if you're neutral, if you're from Sevilla, you know, this was painful.
Yeah, but I loved it. Compared to the Rome Derby earlier, for example,
oh my God.
Compared to the Olimpico at the same time, which was so boring as well. And this was great. You had red cards, you had goals, and what? I mean, the Gudelli goal is just incredible.
And Gudelli's other strikes, the one that...
He was crying because he missed that last chance to win the game. I don't know if they deserve to win the game, to be fair. Maybe the draw is fair. I like how Sevilla played.
I think Betis deserve to win this game. I'm sorry. The Fekir red card.
Oh, man, yeah. It was just like everything you would expect from a grand derby like that in two teams that are in complete different sort of end of the table and the kind of momentum and dynamic. It was, yeah.
Like honestly, I just want to say this to I know people listen to us, they may have different levels of familiarity, they may not be Liga fans or whatever. I know La Liga, they market Barcelona and Real Madrid super heavily and stuff, but this is really one of the classic derbies.
It's
one of the things
amazing.
That makes European football, I think, so special is you have these local derbies. By the way, these aren't bad teams. Sevilla was in the Champions League. They've won the... This derby for me is absolutely special, right up there for me with the Old Firm, with some of the other great derbies
I'm
in terms
you.
Of rivalries.
Completely. Atletico de Madrid are held 1-1 by Espanyol despite having a man advantage for more than an hour. Gab and his Joao Felix, who comes off the bench to rescue El Cholo. I mean, come on.
So, okay. So, as you know, I've been very critical of Joao Felix. I've been backing Simeone for leaving him out. You know what? I'm going to take credit for this. And I say, look, this was Simeone. Simeone playing Joao Felix psychology. When I play you, you stink it up. When I bring you off the bench, you're angry and you're motivated. I don't know if this is what's going on or if he was just kind of desperate at the end.
Yeah.
But Atleti should have done better against 10 men. There's no...
Completely.
They're all adrift. They cannot wait, I think, for the World Cup break.
Yeah.
Olivier Giroud grabs a late winner for Milan, who beat Spezia 2-1 and go back to second place. Jules, I know you love the big, handsome man with a six-pack. And you also love your Techers.
Oh, my.
How good was this? Just
technically
speaking.
You know how good? I shouted at the television, which I rarely do unless it's PSG or France. It was that good. I was like, I could not believe that he got up and jumped that high to volley the ball in at that time because I thought the Tonali cross was just a little bit too far for the header.
Yeah.
And instead, that's the only thing he could have done. It's like such an acrobatic goal.
He's 36 years old.
He's incredible. And he looks after himself well. He's got, at the moment, I think he's got, I mean, he didn't score for eight goals. He didn't score for eight games, before the breaks against Salzburg or something like that, or the game before maybe. And now he's on this run. He wants to go to the World Cup. He's going to go now. I think he convinced Deschamps to take him, which was not that obvious even 3 weeks ago.
This is not a goal that you expect somebody that size,
you're right,
at that age to score it. And you know, Haaland had that similar goal earlier this year.
Yeah, it's a bit against Dortmund. Yeah,
but I think the difference is I watched them again. People sort of compared them, and like the difference is that Giroud looks entirely in control the whole time. Whereas I'm not saying Haaland was uncoordinated.
Yeah,
maybe Haaland just looks more uncoordinated because he's lankier, but. I just thought this was incredible. By the way, shout out Daniel Maldini scored in that game against Spezia.
For Spezia, I mean, against Milan.
Against Milan. I think he's the first Maldini, leaving aside own goals, to score against Milan in a long, long time.
Oh, wow. Florencio Somerville gets the winner as Jesse Marsh. Leeds come from behind to beat Bournemouth 4-3. Gab, they won on the pitch. But they had bad news off the pitch, though, in the courtroom in the Jean-Kevin Augustin case.
Okay. You know my thoughts on lawyers.
Yeah.
I'm just going to explain this briefly as I understand it, and I've read about it, and I am not a lawyer, right? But basically, back when Leeds were in the championship, they took Jean-Kevin Augustin on loan from Leipzig.
Yep.
You know, former Paris Saint-Germain guy. Is he Paris-born?
Yeah, Paris-born. Super promising. I mean,
people thought he was going to be really good.
At 16, I thought he was going to be a world beater.
So they took him on loan from Leipzig, and Leipzig said, okay, fine, but if you get promoted, you're going to have to pay us 21 million.
Yeah, close to buy-in.
But it was an automatic clause,
right? Yeah,
Which
a lot of clubs do.
I think part of the argument was, you know, Leeds were like, we like him so much, but if we don't get promoted, we won't be able to afford him, right? So Leipzig, fine, if you get promoted, you get, you know. what happened, that was the year of COVID. So essentially, the season was extended beyond June 30th. And so Leeds tried to argue that, oh no, but the agreement applies to June 30th. It doesn't apply to the end of the season, even though the season was extended due to a freaking global pandemic and elements beyond everybody's control.
Hundreds of thousands of people dying.
Now, I realize lawyers are lawyers, and maybe if I was in Leeds' position, I would have tried it on. But those lawyers who are arguing this, like, how do you look at yourself in the freaking mirror every morning? Honestly.
I thought this is their job. I don't know, man. Like this.
This is what, this is their job?
I know.
To
I don't
act
know.
Like vermin?
Like, leave them alone.
No, honestly. Again, I don't have a problem with Leeds. I have a problem with these people who justify this. What weird mental contortion. I said it before. It says it in the Bible. It's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a lawyer to enter the kingdom of God. They are good lawyers. Just so many of them are just bad, bad people.
Anyway, they have to pay now.
Jules, you were down on my boy Igor Tudor, by the way, for the way he handled the finale of the Champions League in midweek. You even said he should be sacked.
Two rights.
But he showed bounce-back ability as Marseille beat Lyon. 1-0.
He showed nothing. Marseille won it 1-0. It was a tire board game. Gigot, which is obviously a leg of lamb in English, scored the only goal on the set piece, a header. It's not even a header because he hit it with his shoulder. I've got nothing to say in that game, really. They're two average teams. But at least Marseille have, you know, sort of fourth nine kind of climbing up for Laurent Blanc and Lyon. I just don't know where that leaves them. I can't really tell you.
Is it sort of like, is it the radiation half-life of Peter Boss?
So I think the other Dutch guy, yeah, messed it up so badly that Larry White can't do much more. I mean, I don't know, but it's just like... Newcastle United are third in the Premier League after beating Southampton 4-1 and Ralf Hasenhüttl has reportedly been sacked. Gab, do you want to praise Eddie Howe or obviously feel sorry for Hasenhüttl?
I'm going to do both.
Okay.
Obviously, those results are there for anybody. I did not think Eddie Howe was going to be this good.
No.
I'll be really curious to see if Newcastle keep going from strength to strength, if they keep investing more. How does he do once he gets better players on, in his team? Because obviously it's a different thing. And signings haven't exactly been, you know, just been his forte when he was at Bournemouth. There was a lot of up and down.
That's true.
But right now he's doing what's asked of him. This is tremendous. I'm going to commiserate with Hasenhüttl because, this is a team that every year they've been forced to sell some of their best players. And yes, they have good scouting and they look for value and whatever else. But it's difficult to manage, I think, in those circumstances. I think he's a tremendous manager. I like, and it's difficult for me to say because he is kind of that sort of Red Bull school of, intensity. Yeah, the press. Aha, let's keep attacking, even though we're 2-0 up. And then, and it's difficult to do when you do it with a weaker team, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But I hope he comes back. I really think he's a tremendous coach and a good guy. Jules, we've had the Champions League draw. Let's split this up, okay?
Okay.
From the top half of the draw.
Yeah.
You would just go through this ratatata. Leipzig against Manchester City.
Yeah, I mean, they've met before, quite often actually in the group stages. They always open game. I still think City too strong for Leipzig. Yeah. But I think Leipzig can make it difficult for them.
Bruges.
Hey,
and my man, Mr. Champions League, Hans Onaken, against Benfica.
I mean, the tie, they probably, if you had asked Bruges and Benfica, who do you want to play against, they would have picked each other. So let's see. I think Benfica, this one, have to be the favorite. They've been very impressive, we said.
Yeah.
They won again at the weekend, unbeaten in 23 games, now in all competitions. I don't know when those games are going to be played, how this Benfica side will look, and Bruges as well. But they should be open. They would go
if
for
if they played
it.
Right now, though, Benfica would be heavy. I think Bruges would have wanted to play Porto, but of course they couldn't because they were in the same group.
Yeah.
Liverpool against Real Madrid. This sounds a little familiar.
So it's the revenge of the revenge of the revenge of the revenge, the replay of the replay of the replay of the replay. I mean, we're so used to it. We were together in Paris, of course, for the last Champions League final. This is much earlier. This is a game that I don't think either of them would have fancied facing the other. For me, it's very open, this one. I know maybe you put Real Madrid favorite because of the Champions League final that they won against them. But we saw how well Liverpool played.
Yeah, we don't know what condition Liverpool are going to be in 2 months. But I just any truth you think to the rumor that Sergio Ramos is going to come back on loan just so he can face Mo Salah, so he can live rent free in his head now?
No, but I mean there will be a time where you know Liverpool will get the best out of them. I think.
And finally, Milan against Spurs.
I like this one a lot. You know, I think this one is a proper 50-50 because Spurs haven't played great this season again. There's a couple of months before those games are played, yeah. So a lot can happen. But yeah, I think Milan, Conte going back to Italy, of course, facing Milan again. This one is going to be great. And I fancy the Kalulu-Kane battle in midfield as well, the Theo Hernandez on that left-hand side. I think, you know, Giroud against Spurs.
Or Zlatan Ibrahimovic against Spurs by that point. Maybe even just a few minutes. And, of course, Magic Mike against Happy Hugo.
Yeah, that's true. Battle of the French Keepers. Loads and loads of battles there in that game. And, Gab, I give you the bottom of the draw, the next four, for your quick hits. Frankfurt against Napoli first.
I don't think it's any secret. I think this is the draw that, you know, they never admit it because they respect everybody and blah, blah, blah. This is the draw that Napoli wanted. I think even more so than Bruges, because, of course, Bruges have Mr. Champions League and Eintracht Frankfurt do not. On paper, I think this is the kind of opponent that suits Napoli.
Yeah, it's tough.
Equally, Frankfurt have sprung a surprise or two. Of course, we saw that last season in the Europa League.
Yeah. Dortmund against Chelsea. That's a good one.
It's a good one in the sense, you know, the teams are what they are at this stage. I think Chelsea will feel that they're a good match. A big thing for Dortmund is, will Sebastian Haller be back? And in what condition will he be in? Because not just him, but all these other people, you know, Marco Reus, we saw Gio Reyna come back. Are they going to be fit? And who's going to be fit on the Chelsea end? Because Chelsea, of course, have had their injuries as well. It's a weird one. I hope both these managers will be around when Dortmund play Chelsea in March.
Inter against Porto is the next one.
Okay, no disrespect to Porto and all my Portista friends, but I think Simone Inzaghi did a little jig at this one. I think
happy with that one.
Again, on paper, we're only dealing on paper here.
Yeah.
Because obviously Inter against Spurs would have been a Conte psychodrama, right? Whereas Porto, you get a team that, yes, they qualified, they won their group, and they came back to do it, but they've had issues this year, right? And so I think if you're Inter, you feel pretty good about it. Equally, it works both ways. If you're Porto, you say, hey, you know what? We got a second lease of life after the way we started in the Champions League. We'll take Inter. Why not?
Yeah, definitely. And finally, we kept the best for last, PSG against Bayern Munich. I knew it was going to be that draw.
I know. You weren't happy when this came out. As our producer was reading the ties as they were coming out, you're like, oh, I know, it's going to be Paris
Saint-Germain. I had a feeling. You know what? This morning getting up, I had a feeling. I knew.
And when Inter against Porto came out, you're like, I knew it, because you knew these were the only two teams left. Again, we don't know what they're going to be like post-World Cup. We don't know what they're going to be like, you know. If Messi wins the World Cup, is he going to come back to Paris?
Yeah, but maybe just to go to the bakery.
Is Neymar going to come back if he wins the World Cup? Or is he going to have
Will he still be partying in February? His birthday is in February as well. So.
Will Mbappe get his wish and transfer to another team in January, right? Remember that story?
Exactly,
So there's a lot going on. Obviously, Bayern are the epitome of solidity, but you know what? With those three up front, if they're there, you know, they can beat anybody.
Yeah, sure. And they beat us in the final. We beat them in the quarterfinals the year after. And this is like, you know, another chapter in that rivalry.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
This was a few days ago, but Jules, we love Pep and Ibra so much that we need to bring this up. Zlatan had said in an interview that Pep would only be able to improve Erling Haaland if he controls his ego and doesn't allow himself to be bigger than Erling Haaland. This is an old story. This goes back to when Zlatan played for Pep at Barcelona back in 2009-10.
Yes, of course.
When Zlatan said that Pep's ego was so big that he stifled Zlatan. As if Zlatan can be stifled by a human being.
But no one.
But Pep had the most sarcastic of
reports. Yeah, he said, of course he's right. Of course. I hate when Erling getting scored three goals. I hate when the players are doing well. You know, I want it to be all about me. You know, I think there might be a bit of truth in what Ibra was saying. I think Pep has a big ego, but I think all big managers have anyway, in regards.
Do you think Ancelotti has a big ego?
Maybe not Carlo. That was the exception that confirmed the rule. And I think Pep was right not to go into the sort of the battle with Ibra, answering like kind of seriously if you want, because then that would have given the story more legs, and then we would have asked Ibra, oh, Pep said that, no, it's you the big egocentric. And no. So I guess maybe that's the way.
I will say this, what I find fascinating about the success that Pep has had in winning four of the last five Champions League titles is
Premier League titles,
Champions League.
He wishes.
Is that it really has been all about the collective, right? If we were to identify a star player, we would probably say Kevin De Bruyne, but then they won the title one year when he hardly played,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's true.
And obviously, Zlatan is the opposite of that. And Erling Haaland, we don't quite know what he's going to develop into. Is he going to be a cog in the machine, or is he going to get to the point where he says, I'm so much better than all my teammates, I need to take on more responsibility? It's a fine line, I think.
Yeah,
you know, certain superstars don't have that. But a lot of superstars have that mixture of wanting to take responsibility. It doesn't make them bad people. They're not necessarily megalomaniacs. It'll be interesting where it goes. But for now, everything's going swimmingly.
Yeah. FIFA wrote to all 32 World Cup teams. And what did they ask them, Gav?
They asked them to focus on football and not let ideology and politics get into the game that they love, into the football. Now, the 10 European associations, the ones who are going to wear the One Love armbands and who are going to the World Cup, I'm sorry, it's actually 9 plus Norway who decided to, I guess they'll be wearing their armbands while watching it on television. Now, they had their own response. They said, and I quote, FIFA has repeatedly committed to deliver concrete answers on these issues. The compensation fund for migrant workers and the concept of a migrant worker center to be created in Doha. We will continue to press for these to be delivered. Now, as you know, Jules, I've been critical of some people who've been very performative about this and have jumped on at the end, and I think some people are being incredibly hypocritical about this. But when it comes to these 10 FAs, or 9 FAs plus Norway, who are going to be at the World Cup, this is exactly the message that you should send back.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this isn't looking back necessarily at what happened before. Like, oh, FIFA, take the World Cup away, blah, blah, blah. They're saying, look, they've done their homework. They said, what's happened, happened. We recognize that you've cut or you've reformed your laws. And hopefully there'll be fewer deaths. But there are some serious things that we need to address. One is a compensation fund for the families of the workers who died. Because you know what? If you get injured in a workplace in many countries, many wealthy developed nations, and Qatar is a wealthy developed nation, you get insurance, you get a pension, your family gets a payment, right? Did this happen with the migrant workers who died in Qatar? We need to establish that. We need to have a fund. And if they didn't, then we need to make sure their families back home are taken care of. This is something that can be done. It's a very specific issue. It's not this general, like, oh, you know, you're slave workers. And the other one, the Migrant Workers Center, where now that you've passed these new laws, you have to make sure that there are lawyers available to them, good lawyers, not like the bad lawyers I mentioned before, who are Qatari, who know the law, and who are going to be available to these migrant workers who are there so that they know their rights. Because many of these people move there, you know, they'll be in camps, they might not speak the language. You need to have this level of oversight.
These
are two things that do not cost a lot of money. They, I think, you can legitimately ask for. I think there are people in Qatar who say, yeah, we should do this. And I think you're at the tipping point where I think this can be done. This is actually something positive and lasting that can come out of this and goes beyond the finger pointing. So well done to these nations who've raised the issue. FIFA have said, you know, like as I said, FIFA has said, oh, we want this too. Okay, fine. Since we all want the same thing, now let's make it happen. And let's not forget about these people after the World Cup final on December 18th.
Yeah.
Jules, we also had the draw for the Europa League today.
Yeah.
I'm not as excited because, let's face it, they're not playing for a while. There's a big old World Cup in between. These teams could look very different. But we have a standout. This is the playoff round. Of course, the winners of this get into the round of 16. And it's Barcelona taking on Manchester United.
Yeah, incredible, Gab, really. Because once Man U finished second of their Europa League group behind Real Sociedad, they were always going to face then a team dropping out from the Champions League. And I think Barca really with Juventus were the two biggest ones, the biggest names, but I think also the toughest opposition. They could have had, I don't know, Salzburg or a team like that. And instead, it's Barca, it's Cristiano Ronaldo going back to the Camp Nou, it's Ten Hag against Xavi, it's Frankie de Jong playing against his current team and against his former future ex-team, whatever. It's going to be great.
It's also the pressure on Barcelona too, because obviously last season when, you know, Xavi was harshly criticized when they went out of the Europa League.
Against Frankfurt, yeah.
And, you know, this time around, there's going to be, even for financial reasons, there's an expectation to go and bring some ducats in, right?
Really? And for United as well, the tension, United cannot not qualify just for the last 16 of the Europa League. It would be disastrous for the club's image, for Ten Hag's first season, even if after that you focus on the league. It would not be good enough. So what a game this is going to be. And Robert Lewandowski against Cristiano Ronaldo as well.
Wow.
Fulham have terminated a deal with one of the sponsors, Gab, Titan Capital Markets, after it emerged that a number of their key employees simply didn't exist. I mean, come on.
Yeah, this was an investigation by Nick Harris, and before him, I don't remember the guy's name, Martin Kaladin, I think. It's he tweets under Ugly Game, where he looks kind of under the skin of some of these deals. This is pretty extraordinary,
crazy.
Right? So this company, Titan Capital Markets, in all their promotional materials, they said, oh, look, this is so-and-so, the CEO. This is so-and-so, the chief technology officer. They're not real people. They use actors and models in their picture. If you go to LinkedIn to look for these people, none of them exist, or most of them don't exist. They promised it was some kind of foreign exchange investment. They promised a return of 480% a year, which at the current market would be really impressive. And they said, oh, but you can't lose your money because there's some, you know, fictional insurance scheme. According to investigators, it basically looks like a classic pyramid scheme. Fulham, to their credit, have terminated this deal immediately.
To their credit, I don't give them any credit because they did sign with them.
And so I wonder,
what's the credit?
What kind of due diligence did they do?
How can you sign a... So what? Someone calls and said, hey, I've got an investment company. I want to sponsor you. I give you £300,000 and I can put your name next to my company's name. And Fulham just go like, who are you? Titan Capital Market. Let me Google you. Okay, you look legit. Yeah, no problem. Let's go.
We'll take your money.
Who does? Come on.
And look, we don't pick on Fulham. Manchester City, of course, had a well-known case like this as well. I think which football clubs who care so much about publicity and their image would say, like, who are we taking money from?
Exactly.
Because
you know,
it's one thing.
I understand.
Are we taking money from con men and scam artists?
Yeah, big time.
I mean, Lukas Podolski is now 37, Jules, but he can still hit them. How about his goal for Gornik against Pogon in the Polish league?
You don't lose it. It's like a good, 10, 15 yards in his own half and then hit the most perfect lob to score that goal. It's incredible. I mean, I think at that level, at that talent, you just don't lose that kind of vision. And then the execution, he's probably not as quick as he used to be, but technically he will never lose his technique, really. And he still looked fit.
So I saw this. And
how can you not celebrate a goal like this?
I will celebrate it. But if you put this up against another former Arsenal star, like, say, Olivier Giroud, and the goal scored.
No one said
or indeed, if you put this up against Youssoufa Moukoko, and the goal, he was inside his own hand, in his own half, but he still chipped the keeper. I don't know. This leaves me a little bit cold. Somebody belted the ball from...
It's a hell of a strike, the trajectory of the ball, everything. Like, he's a good 60 yards away from the goal.
He's very far. David Beckham did that too against Wimbledon many
years. Yeah, exactly. And you don't see them many often as well. That's why they make them so special.
All right, Paul D. We kid because you know why Podolski triggers me? You know why?
His kebab shop?
No.
Okay.
2014 World Cup final. I saw, in the press box at World Cup finals, where you're not supposed to wear team colors, especially if you're a journalist.
Yeah.
Right? It's considered.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So I see a dude in a Podolski shirt, and to make who's a journalist, I won't say where he's from, but it doesn't matter. He's not German. So this triggered me for three reasons. Number one, he's wearing a Germany shirt. Number two, he's wearing a Podolski shirt. Number three, he's in the press box. And I thought to myself, what kind of person are you? What kind of person that you're not German, but A, you choose to wear team colors in the press box, Two, you choose to wear Germany's team colors. Out of all the teams you can pick in the tournament, you choose Germany. And number three, you choose out of all the German players you can choose, you choose Lukas Podolski.
So 8 years on, it still triggers you. I can. It's still raw. I can tell.
Genuinely annoyed me. Okay. Genuinely annoyed me.
Fair enough. Let's see if the next question annoys you as well, because Liverpool have unveiled a mural of legendary former Liverpool strikers. Sir Kenny is on here, Rush, Suarez, Torres, Mane, Salah, even De Kuyt and Divock Origi. That's Divock Origi is there. But no Michael Owen gap. What?
This may be triggering to some, but if you know the history of Michael Owen and the way many Liverpool fans, not all, but many Liverpool fans feel about him.
Oh, because he went to play for United.
I don't think it's as simple as the fact that he went to play for United, because of course he went to play for Real Madrid first. I think he just never connected, even though obviously he grew up at the club, and I think he was their youngest ever goal scorer at the time and whatever, and scored a ton of goals. Liverpool weren't particularly good when he was there, which I think was part of it. I just don't think he ever connected with the supporters the way he did. I think when he went to Real Madrid, if I'm not mistaken, didn't he allow his contract to run down so he could move for a lower fee as well? All these things, I think, come together, and he never had the connection. Look, it's funny, when we like players, right? We like players for what they do on the pitch, but we also like them for the way they project themselves off the pitch. When Michael Owen doesn't, now obviously he's trained on television and he appears, I think he comes across better. But when he was a player, he didn't necessarily have that kind of natural chest-beating charisma that other players have. So he never had that connection with supporters. And it's unfortunate for him. I don't know that he cares. I mean, I think we both worked with him, you more than me, but like, will he be upset by this, that he's not on Liverpool's mural?
I don't think he's very nice. I mean, he's at the same level as, what, Cinema Pongol and, you know, players like that, basically.
And all the Liverpool strikers who have never been on there. Yeah, Mario Balotelli's not on there either.
Yeah, true. I mean, no Mario Balotelli. I just think that he's above those guys. You know what I mean? Like, I know there's some proper legends of the club in the ones who are on the mural. I don't know. He won them trophies. You know, that season where they won the 5 trophies under Houllier. They still 5 trophies, Gab.
5 trophies.
I know, but still, they still won a lot of trophies with him, and he was a big part of that. The guy won the Ballon d'Or as a Liverpool player.
But you recognize that he didn't ever have the connection with the fans.
No, I get that.
That Robbie Fowler, by the way, I wonder if Robbie Fowler is on there. Because it's not on my list, but Robbie Fowler, I would assume, should be there, right?
Should. I would expect him to, but to be fair, I would have expected Owen to be there too, but, you know, that's just...
It's a funny one. Jules, we saw an epic MLS Cup final on Saturday, and we have new champions, LAFC.
Yeah, incredible. Well done to LAFC, to Gareth Bale, to Giorgio Chiellini, to Carlos Vela.
Giorgio Chiellini didn't play really much of a part in the final.
No, but still, he's part of the squad. You know, maybe his experience was good. And a young club, like a young franchise, sorry. But what a final, though. What a scenario to start with. The draw, late in extra time, the Gareth Bale goal to take it to penalties. That penalty shootout.
When the goal went to 3-2, right? When that guy Elliot scored, and like, you know, people were saying like, oh, like Southgate should take him to the World Cup. Ha ha ha! I thought, all right, this is over. I'm gonna take my Phil Union gear out,
of course.
And then who else? Gareth Bale comes on for the equalizer, and then the penalties. I felt good because it's like, oh, Andre Blake, Alexis Nunez told me only Jesus saves more.
Yeah. Exactly, and considering LAFC had to change the goalkeeper, the one who came on, that Murphy.
There was a horrible, horrible collision, by the way. And I think the referee was stunned because it took him an hour to realize to send off the starter for LAFC. It was pretty bad.
And then that unlikely less of all heroes, the goalkeeper to save two like that, it's just incredible.
You know, he was the Philadelphia Union's backup goalkeeper previously.
So I didn't know before, but I learned while watching.
I also learned it while watching.
Crazy.
We still like you, Jim Curtin.
Yeah, of course. Racing Club won the Trofeo de Campeones, the Argentine Super Cup on Sunday 2-1. And, you know, I put my Boca jersey, of course, despite the defeat. But Gab, the reason we're talking about this is that referee Facundo Tello, who's going to go to the World Cup, by the way, sent off 10 players in that game, 7 from Boca and 3 from Racing.
I have never seen a game like that, bro, with 10 players sent off. Obviously, you knew it was going to be testy and whatever. Now, in case you're wondering, there is a rule that you know you can't play with fewer than eight players,
eight
right?
Seven, yeah.
You can't play. So obviously the game kind of just ended after he sent everybody off. There were cards before, and this was the celebration, but it was an extra time. There was like a million minutes of time added on, so they maybe could have still gotten back into it, conceivably, right? But no, instead decided to get sent off. It was pretty remarkable. Dario Benedetto, by the way, I've never seen this before. From what I could tell, and the game only just ended a few hours ago as we record this, I think he was sent off for making a gesture suggesting that the referee had been paid off.
Yeah, I think he looked like that.
And certainly the commentators, the Spanish commentators are saying, oh, look, they've caught him. He's going like, you know, like this or whatever. He's going to get sent off. Like, a very, very stupid way to get sent off. Mm. Jules, that brings us to an end. But we gotta come back on Thursday because midweek football.
Everywhere.
How about that?
Yeah.
Everywhere. Yeah. Cram him in while you can. And of course, the eagerly anticipated Carabao Cup here in England. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.